Hello and welcome to another podcast, Connecting Consciousness, from me. It's been an extra week. I decided not to do one last week, mainly because there seemed to be so much to do and it was quiet. And I always guessed that it would be a little bit busier with this week, the time off, and it absolutely has. There's been an incredible amount going on. Now, I did most of the recording for the working out for yesterday, but weren't able to do that. And this morning, obviously, things have changed as well. So the updates on the website, which were accurate at the time of being sent out, have got moved on. So rather than continually update the website, what I'm doing today is the podcast, the 28th today. I'm hoping that, as it's the morning now, this will go out later on today. So very rarely I have to write things down, but there's been so much happening and so many names that I've actually made some notes here, which I'll refer to. So the first thing I want to look back on is the murder, and I do believe we can call it a murder, that took place in the Saudi Arabian embassy in Turkey. We've seen so many moves and counter-moves, and over a period of time the truth seemed to be drawn out. My understanding is that he was murdered, and we'll go into a bit more detail in a minute, and his body was cut up into probably 15 pieces. I don't know whether you'll hear anyone else giving you the number 15, but I'm giving you the number 15 pieces, and taken out of the country. Now, for many people it seems crazy and they don't get it. The point is that this guy was not murdered on Turkish soil. He was murdered in Turkey, but he was murdered in the Saudi Arabian embassy. Embassies are not owned by the government of the land. They're owned by the government that has the embassy. So in other words, that's sovereign territory. So if somebody dies or is murdered in an embassy, they are technically murdered in the country who owns the embassy. So Turkey can't actually instigate a murder inquiry because nobody was murdered in Turkey. This guy was murdered in Saudi Arabia, although the embassy is in Turkey. We need to understand what's going on here. Turkey was tipped off about this and had made sure that they had quite a lot of information coming forward. One of the great back issues here, which is not coming through on the story, is the situation that money is being cut off to both the Saudi regime and to the Israeli regime. There was to be a very large, high-profile meeting at which the Crown Prince and possibly the King were going to attend from Saudi Arabia. And this is where really a large amount of money was going to be given in contracts or deals. That actually has been cut off. This money has been actually cut off to both Israel and to Saudi Arabia. There's no money now for deals. And one of the major reasons that many governments pulled out from attending this meeting isn't out of concern for a death or a murder. That's because there's nothing in it for them. There is no money. There's no point in going. But we've seen large contingents from China and from Russia going, and that's mainly because Russia is not controlled by a satanic government, and therefore they're not on the receiving end of this. And China, of course, is controlled largely by the dragon groups, the dragon societies, and the white dragons actually wanted to go to the meeting and see it up close for themselves. So we should see the cut-off of money as an attack against the satanic forces of the West, because this money comes through via Saudi Arabia and Israel, and the money then comes out through from them. So there's an incredibly complex situation here. And Turkey very much is working to try to bring truth as to what's happening, but Turkey has not mentioned Israel at all. They just talked about Saudi Arabia. So that was really important, and that was feeling through. Then we've had these pipe bombs or explosive devices. Now, whether they are actually viable bombs or not, we're getting conflicting information. Large numbers of people saying that they were workable, others saying they weren't. But we can certainly say that something occurred. Now, this guy, I think we pronounce his name as Caesar or Caesar Hassog, appeared to live in a van, and he was sort of semi-homeless. The difficulty I have... The difficulty, that's the entertainment for you, the difficulty that I have with this narrative is that the van, and there are pictures of this van on the internet, which the authorities, through the established media, have very kindly given us, is in a fantastically good condition. I don't get this. This is a guy who's supposed to be living rough. He filed for bankruptcy in 2012, and doesn't appear to have a job, and yet the van has got some very, very up-to-date modern stickers. It's just completely covered with stickers, and maybe we can get a picture of that. Andy might be able to put that on later. And that just doesn't match with the vision of a down and out person, you know, who's very angry, living in a mess. And there's something not right there. I'm going to look at my list now, because the people who received these pipe bombs, let's call them pipe bombs at the moment, George Soros, Hillary Clinton, ex-President Obama, John Brennan, who was an ex-CIA director, Eric Holder, and he's again an Attorney General, Robert De Niro, and James Clapper, who's again an ex-director of the National Intelligence. Now, the vast majority of those people are in the military or have been in the military, and it's not that they've worked against President Trump themselves, is that we can say that they have covered over, or they've allowed activities which were anti-Trump to take place under their watch. So these are senior people who are no longer senior people, who were aware of and allowed certain things to occur which were anti-Trump. The others named on there were obviously against Trump and spoke out against Trump. There are a couple of names missing off there, senators, Democratic senators. So what the media are not saying is that the feeling, the words behind this are, you've tried to kill President Trump. This is to the elite satanic group. You've tried to kill President Trump on numerous occasions. Now we're going to kill you. And that's a very, very interesting change, because up until now what's happened is that Trump's bodyguards have protected him, or the military have protected him, or the intelligence has protected him. And this is the first time overtly that the game has now been ratcheted up. So it's a case of, you've tried all this, well, have some of your own medicine. Now, I did say to others 3 or 4 days ago that this appeared to be the work of an intelligence or military group, not just a crazed man in the back shed tinkering and knocking up something with a few wires and bits of cork and rubber. This had all the hallmarks of something far more organized. So we need to watch that. I don't believe we'll get any more truth out of this, but that sparked something. And what it immediately sparked was a response, an attack from the other side, which had been building, and that was the stock market, the Dow Jones being hit. The Dow Jones has taken a massive hit. Now, if you're not really into stocks and shares, just go and have a quick look if you can and see how it's dropped. Why would they attack the stock market? Well, we've got the midterm elections in early November coming up in America. Remember that the military obtains large amounts of money from the stock market. I know that's not publicly shown, and it doesn't account, but there is. There's huge amounts of money go from the Dow Jones stock market to the military, and it has done for a very long time. So any reduction, severe reduction in the stock market, impacts the military. And if we accept that President Trump was put into office or encouraged into office by the patriot American military, then satanic forces would want to hurt the patriotic American military, so they would attack the stock exchange. Also, that has a big effect because Trump has said that under him the stock market will do well, and generally it has. You can't argue with that. So just before a midterm that's quite damaging. And then what do we get? We get very late on news, 11 people possibly killed, 4 police officers injured in an attack on the Pennsylvanian synagogue. So again, we need to see this as not isolated. We need to see it as part of this ongoing, you do this, I'll do this back to you. Oh, well, okay, if you've done that, then I'm going to do this. Oh, right, you've done that, I'll do this. And it's the ordinary people who are getting stuck in the middle of this. Now, if you look at the photographs of these two perpetrators, they're both remarkable in that they don't have a great deal of emotion in their faces. I've looked at the shooter's face at the synagogue. It doesn't appear to me to have demonic possession. It doesn't appear to have your traditional MK Ultra type mind control. It did detect some form of handling there, and that's quite interesting. Just going back actually to the pipe bomber, he was well known to the FBI because he'd made bomb threats some years ago, and it's quite interesting that they say that they got his fingerprints on the bomb, and they were able to match it up. You remember when President Kennedy was murdered, supposedly by Lee Harvey Oswald, and then he himself was shot by somebody as he was walking out from the courtyard, or courthouse, I believe. Often organizations are able to use agents to take their message or take their campaign forward, and the agent themselves either genuinely has no knowledge whatsoever of what they've done or what they're involved in, or they have it so well hidden that investigators can't get it out of their mind. So it's been a very well held pattern that it's not your James Bond type character where you have this 007 character who goes out and shoots people and it's incredibly glamorous. The reality is that most dirty work are done by people who their minds are, they belong to somebody else, they're controlled, and they may have no knowledge of what they've done afterwards, which is fantastic from their point of view, because they go to a lie detector test in the US and they pass the lie detector test because they have no knowledge of it. It's a very useful tool for these organizations, and I believe that's what we're looking at. So what I'm asking everyone is, don't look at this as isolation. See all of these as part of a pattern, and the glue that holds this together is the midterm elections. The Democrats, and I'm not suggesting the Democrats are behind this, the people behind this are much higher. The people behind this control the political parties. But from their point of view, if the Democrats were to take control of the House of Representatives and the Senate, then they would be able to somewhat put a stop on Trump and maybe even start impeachment. They really would like to impeach President Trump. So this midterm is seen as quite a big battle. It's also designed to take focus away from opening the sealed indictments. You see, while this is going on, the domestic politics in America is so shocked and rocking from one thing to the next that they wouldn't be able emotionally to take a whole indictments and all that goes with it. So what they're doing is they're attempting to push this back. And I did say on previous radio shows, October, November, December are crucial months for the United States of America. And if Trump doesn't open or get the indictments opened by the 20th of December, then as far as I'm concerned, there's a real problem here. And one of the ways of preventing that agenda is literally to rock the United States with domestic terrorism of one sort or another, to such an extent that there isn't that capacity for the citizens to take on board yet more distress. So I do see part of this as a plan to destabilize the midterm elections and to prevent opening of sealed indictments, because they know as well as I do, October, November, December are the three crucial months, and if those indictments aren't opened to that date, then the chances of taking the positive agenda forward are greatly reduced. There was one comment saying that how bad I was to limit President Trump. That you know, if he hadn't opened it by December, you know, I'm not limiting President Trump. What I'm doing is looking at the energies, hearing what I'm being told, and looking at the timeline we're on. And humanity doesn't have this infinite period of time. We can just walk around, have a lovely walk in the garden, sit in the armchair. We've got to get on and do things. We are time limited. We are on a positive timeline, but only if we maintain that. And one of the ways of maintaining that is to continually fight for and push for truth and the positive agenda. So all I'm doing is I'm alerting everyone, including Mr. Trump, if he was ever to listen to any of my radio shows, that he needs to get on and he needs to get these indictments opened. All he's got to do is just open one before 20th of December. Just open one publicly. The rest will follow. Okay, so that was that. I wanted very quickly then to talk about in Great Britain. We've had this rather tragic helicopter crash that's come down in the car park or the parking lot of Leicester City Football Club. And, you know, we do get aviation accidents, and why would this be anything unusual or special? Because the owner of Leicester Football Club is a billionaire, somebody who is widely known. And it's something that I think I'd ask you all just to have a little bit of research into. I'm getting told, and we're doing this in the morning on Sunday, I'm getting told that there were four people on the aircraft, and the concern is that the daughter is on that aircraft and will be presumably deceased if she was on there. And there was something very unusual about the daughter. She was very much a rising star. The soul in her body wasn't your standard type of soul. So do I believe this was something more than an accident? Yes, I do. But it's incredibly early days, and I've only had one report on it outside of the usual BBC news. So it's been phenomenally busy. It's been incredibly busy. It's been very difficult to keep up with the changes, to understand how one impacts on another. So I'm sorry to have gone on. I want to get on to the questions. It's really important, but there's a heck of a lot going on. As I said, there would be, and in fairness, so have others, not just me saying, you know, it's going to get really busy. It certainly has, in a way that we don't actually want. All of this usual drama does cost lives. I know there are people that say, when these things happen, nobody gets hurt, it's all actors. Well, that's not actually true. People do get killed and they do get hurt. There may be an actor or actors involved, but they're generally, in many cases, is real loss of life, and that's you know, got to stop. Right, thank you, Becky. Let's go on with the questions, please.
Okay, the first question is by Lyra Midsummer. Have you read Philip Pullman's Dark Materials trilogy? What is your take on his concepts of missing children, child torture, the corrupt church, other dimensions, and demons? He is an Oxford Don. Does he have inside information?
I believe that he wrote, to my knowledge, three books, and one was made into a film. It's called The Golden Compass. The film was not a success. I don't know why, because actually I thought the film was better than the book. I read the first book and I couldn't read the other two books, simply because it was so near the truth. And there was a lot of poignant stuff in there which I could identify with, that I couldn't face the other books. That's to do with the child hurting the children. The film actually obviously was Hollywood, made for the general market, so it didn't really tackle that. It was done in a much more gentle way. It's a bit like J.K. Rowling, as when a person writes books or creates things at that level, do they receive downloads of information? Are they being briefed by psychics, or are they being briefed by, you know, members of the intelligence, or do they themselves have their own experiences? So the interesting thing was that, if I remember, in Pullman's books, we're going with the books, not the film, each child had a spirit guide, but they were animals, and they could work with their spirit guides, their animals, and what the adults feared was the children, and they wanted to separate the children from their spirit guides. And there was this thing called dust, which seemed to be source, a god that was drawn down, and this was again something that was a commodity which was hugely valuable. And we think about the reptilians not trading in gold or silver, but trading in DNA on human body parts. The abduction of the children, in Pullman's books, the organization of counter groups who were designed to try and spring these kids from these camps or interrupt the flow of this child trafficking. Perhaps that is why the film was never scheduled for a number two or a number three release, because the vast majority of humans don't have our knowledge. If you're listening to this show, then you do have knowledge, and you know when you read a book or see a film, you can pick up the grains of truth. For the vast majority of people, they'll just look at it and say, that's just too far-fetched, or no, I just don't like it. And so it's not successful. So why would Hollywood put into the film a book that is trying to give the truth? That is because there are a number of directors out there who are determined to bring the truth. Don't please think that Hollywood is full of evil people. There are some really good people there who try and bend the rules to bring out some facts and truth to the people. Think about The Matrix. The Matrix was authorized. In other words, they were allowed to go where they went with it. But when you start talking about abducted children, then the satanic forces are not really going to let you go very far with it. So the answer, I think, to your question, and that's the first time anyone's asked me a question on that, is yes. Thank you.
Yes, I remember. It's been a long time since I saw that. But the animals, which they call daemons or demons, but they were actually part of the child's soul. It was an integral part of their soul, of their spirit, as a kind of expression on the outside of themselves that came across as a spirit guide. And yeah, as when they were children, the daemons were able to shapeshift and change from one animal to another, and it involved an element of creativity. Uh-huh. But when the
children became adults,
he became an adult, the daemon fixed into a certain animal.
The guy who played, I can't remember in the film, he played Lord something and had a white leopard or a white, wasn't it a white leopard he had? He was Ariel's, was her name Ariel, her father?
Yeah.
Lord Ariel. Yeah. Anyway, so yes, I call them spirit guides, but you're absolutely right, your knowledge on that or memory is better than mine on that. It's something that because of the child trafficking, I found that, I say deeply offensive, I don't mean the book offended me in that sense of the word, but because it brought up, you know, one of the battles that, you know, many of us, including all those people who listen to this show, you know, we want is to prevent all this child trafficking. And so when, you know, there it is in a book and you're thinking, yeah, that's really true, that's really right, you know, and you begin to realize just how many people in high places know the truth but don't do anything about it. And that's the point, isn't it? They know the truth but they don't do anything about it, although they are often in the position where they could. All right, thank you, Becky. Next one then.
Okay, thank you. Shirley asks, what are the blue aliens from Sirius doing on Earth at this present time?
I've never seen a blue alien. It is tricky because one thinks of the blue avians, which I've never seen. I've got to accept that there will be aliens that are bluish colour. I can't say because I've not seen them they don't exist. That would just be very close-minded of me, wouldn't it? I don't know of a race from the Sirius or Cyrus Federation that have blue beings on there. There is, I think we talked possibly about this before, there is the possibility where they have a blue haze around them, an energy form that is blue. But if you're talking about physical bodies that are blue, I can't unfortunately help you with that. I've not seen that.
Okay, thanks. Lisa asks, hi, I wondered what is your view on autism? Are the people who have autism here for a reason to help or assist humanity in the transition of changing and evolving?
That's an interesting question, because I've not been asked that before, and people are quite frightened of going into these areas because they're just uncomfortable with it. I guess that any parent or any carer or anybody who's associated with an autistic child or person, they know that that individual is incredibly super intelligent. The difficulty is that on this controlled 3D planet, there isn't the method to measure it, or more importantly, there isn't the method on this planet to engage with somebody with that level. We're going to call it disability, because it is a disability on this third dimensional planet, because it's not understood and accepted, and the system is frightened of it. The question specifically is asking, why would you turn up like that? Why would you come here in that mode? There'll be a percentage that don't choose to be like that. There'll be a percentage that are attacked, and that's energetically what occurs. There'll be those that have a physical failure in the body or the mind or something like that. So that'd be a medical thing. The doctors would be okay to talk to about that one. If we accept that people who have autism are hugely psychic or hugely intellectual, but are not capable of showing it in the way that the system measures it on this planet, then the only way they can be affecting or interfering or having that input would be on an energy level. So if they physically aren't able to make those changes, then it must be on an energy basis. And many people in the industry, the alternative industry, struggle to conceptualize the capability of somebody who physically does a 9-to-5 job, but in the evening does something completely different without physically leaving their own home. And that for many is too fanciful. However, that actually is very accurate and does occur. So I would have to say that if somebody chose to be here in that position, I think it would be about helping humanity. So basically, I tend towards that rather than a person came to this planet to be in an autistic body because they had a lesson to learn. And they've never really been down that road. I think if you turn up like that, either you've been forced into that position against your will, or you're here because you positively want to use skills and abilities that the ordinary humans don't have. So I hope that helps. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Megan's question is this. I read a while back that before the giant statue of Moloch was erected at Bohemian Grove, there used to be a giant statue of Buddha. Is this true? And if so, was Buddha originally an Illuminati deity? Is Buddha a negative symbol, and were sacrifices and rituals performed in front of this statue as well? And is Buddha and Buddhism really a front to practice dark magic?
Okay, thank you. Again, a lot of people won't. Why would you? Why would you have the knowledge of Bohemian Grove, unless you take an interest in it? It goes back, I think, to probably about 1896. My grandfather was born in 1896, so it's just coincidence, but I think it goes back to about that time. Certainly by 1900, people were meeting there. The word Bohemian is still being kept because it meant alternative. Back in those days, if you think of some of the great writers and thinkers, they were described as being Bohemian, meaning that they had unconventional lifestyles. So there was, to my knowledge, a Buddha figure, and I think that it was there till about 1920s, something like that, and just I don't know, just fell apart or it just wasn't kept. No, it was not a scene, something that we should think of as evil. It wasn't intended as that. It was really what it was. It was a bohemian group that were looking for spiritual guidance, and to my knowledge, no sacrifices were undertaken in the front of the Buddha. It's not a sacrificial culture at that point in history. It certainly in some parts of India it became so, but I don't think that we should associate that with the Buddha. What's interesting, in the mid-60s, Bohemian Grove had what I think was called the Owl Club. I think I'm about right, the Owl Club. And we've got people like the Bushes, Ronald Reagan, Nixon, who were members of the Owl Club. And it was called the Owl Club because the owl had been placed up. It's not going to be called the Moloch Club, because that's just too obvious, isn't it? So they just hide behind the fact that it's an owl and it's wisdom. So I hope that answers those questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ramon asks, or says, "Dear Simon, there have been many videos about how there are serious inconsistencies with the idea that the planet is a globe. One that is very interesting has to do with the curvature of the planet. Research reveals that there is no curvature in bodies of water over many miles where curvature is expected. Something like 6 inches every 9 miles should be observed if the planet is a globe. Many argue that it is flat and that it is flat. Can you comment on this? Thank you."
Well, it's another take on the flat Earth point, but written slightly more interestingly and with more thought. I haven't changed my opinion. The Earth is not flat. The Earth is a globe. But you're right about, you're talking about the water in some sense, and I want to explain it. Often on this planet, in the third dimensional world, we create things that have already existed elsewhere. So, you know, when people wanted to fly, they must have seen birds flying. When people see how bodies repair healing, they have perhaps tried to extrapolate that into modern science. Our computers, which were given to us in the beginnings in 1947, operate on a disk, and that information is kept on a disk. And I've said this a number of times, and I think it's again is going to be worth repeating. So whether you have a laptop or whether you have a computer, you could have the disk. There are now more modern machines that don't operate on a disk system. But that's getting on to the real advanced stuff. But we'll just talk about what we're mainly familiar with, like an old disc. And remember, before that, we had the DVD disc, had the CD disc, and before that, the old gramophone record, the old shellac plastic gramophone record that used to have to wind up and play. So all a disc that contains information. And this is the thing running through here. If we could try to understand that the powerhouse behind this holographic representation that we're in is a disk. Just imagine that for a minute. You know, if you look at the universe, if you look at the star system, the Milky Way, and everything, and you know, you zoom out many, many, many millions of miles, it appears to be a disk shape, a bit like an egg that's been cracked in a frying pan. I know that's probably not the right analogy for people who are vegetarians or vegans, but I'm trying to get you to understand a sort of a flying saucer shape with a bulge in the middle thinning out. Well, if you can go down this road, that a object that's disc-like is encoded with all the information, and that then creates the 3D reality around us. So your disc on your computer, hello Rook, the disc on your computer, I think he's going to knock something off in a minute. Let's see how agile he is. If we look at that and we say, that's in my computer, that disk is spinning, the information is read on that, and that produces appears to be a 3D image on my computer screen or television screen. So the Earth appears to be round because it is round. And I said to you that the Earth is round. I believe the Earth is round. It is created round. But what is creating it isn't necessarily round. It is a store of information that is created to provide a holographic experience for living creatures, and the humans are high up on that chain, high up on that order, to be able to go with that. Now, sometimes there are, just like in the Matrix, there are glitches in the system. So when we look at, say, water, or we look at something over, we subject it to a scientific test, then it should show this, or it should show this sign, and it doesn't, because its creational force is not in the environment that we're looking at it. It has been superimposed here, and it's maintaining the reality that it was created in, rather than accepting the reality it's come into. So you're partially right, but the Earth is round, it definitely is round, but what's creating it is not round. Now that's probably going to cause lots more questions, but thank you very much. It was really great to have that. Thank you.
Thanks. Rosie says, is there a real basis to the Nesara/Gesara story of circulating the vast reserves of funds back to the whole world? Is there hope for Trump's seizing the riches of the corrupt elite and redistributing them to the needy? Let's hope so. Thanks for all of your devotion to the truth.
Oh, thank you for that comment. I don't think we can just give any huge credit to Trump on this one. What we can do is say there are a number of people and organisations that are committed to it. I've used to refer to it as Solomon's Gold. And the White Dragons, of all the dragon societies in China, are probably the most open towards this redistribution of wealth. The question is, what do you do? Do you give everyone, I don't know, $12,000, $20,000, however much it would be for every man, woman and child? And you say, there you go, there's your money, do with it what you want. Or do you say, right, we're going to literally redistribute the wealth, but we're going to change the system, and we're going to have a real medical care that really does care about people, not about the shareholders or the politicians or the newspapers. We're going to have a real police force that has rules and regulations which are designed to really protect people. We're going to have a court system that really helps the individual, not the system, etc., etc., etc. So, you know, would you say that Trump was likely to do that? No, he probably wouldn't. He's more likely to say, I can use this money to do away with the Federal Reserve Bank. I mean, you know, we didn't talk about the Fed when we were talking about the stock exchange, but one of the reasons, of course, that the stock exchange is doing what it's doing is partly because the Fed is hiking up interest rates, because the Fed is anti-Trump. President Trump wants to do away with the Federal Reserve. He's not the first president, but he's almost the first. There's only been one or two others that really had the handle on what the Fed was capable of and what it was about. So if Trump had the money, he would probably use that to put in place a system that prevented the Federal Reserve from, you know, being in place. You can't just legislate it out as one president did many years ago. You couldn't do that now, not without martial law. So there really is a movement. There are vast amounts of gold hidden in caves, in places. And by the way, America's actually managed to increase its store of gold under Trump. It's got more gold now than it's had for many, many years. Trump has been working with his people to bring gold in. But nevertheless, there really is a move to try to redistribute wealth away from a fanatical arm that exists and away from satanic forces. And we won't really get peace on this planet until that money isn't there anymore. You see, as long as that gold is there, it doesn't matter what you say we could do with it. The fact is it's there, and there are a large number of people who say, that's mine, that's what I live for, that's my nest egg, that's mine, this, that and the other. But you take that away from them, then they have to concentrate on other things, like how beautiful the flowers are, or let's save that tree from being chopped down. Let's reduce pollution, rather than how much gold have I got in my cave. So yes, that's got to happen, and you know, the sooner the better. Thank you.
Okay, Jim says, I think I know the answer to this, but about your father. I know you are fighting him and his agenda, but my question is there some part of you that respects him? You're on opposing sides, but is there a feeling of mutual respect?
I tell you what I do respect. I respect the Draconis culture in terms of its history, in terms of its long, long life, in terms of the many, many things that the reptilians have actually achieved that haven't hurt anybody. They are, very good at miniaturizing equipment. They are very good at understanding genetics. The trouble is that, of course, they've used that knowledge that is in a way to create themselves more powerfully and to hurt others. And they have this overriding, arrogant belief that they're God's gift, that they have the right to do what they do. Now, when European settlers turned up on Polynesian islands and gave them worthless bowls of glass, pretty coloured glass, and said, just sell us your island for all these lovely coloured bits of glass. It wasn't that the Polynesian people were stupid, they were children. And they accepted this because they didn't understand money. They didn't understand value or worth. What they understood was beauty. So they would see a rainbow, or they would see the stars or the sun. So when they were given beautiful pieces of coloured glass, they would hold them up to the light and it was beautiful. And that's a simple love. That's not avarice or greed. So when a technologically superior nation engages with a technologically dumber nation, they will dominate them. Although, of course, as far as I'm concerned, the Polynesians were more spiritually advanced than the Western Europeans at that time. And so it is that humans are spiritually more advanced than reptilians. But we're in a 3D world which recognizes material items. So, yes, I totally respect the intelligence and the capabilities. What I have always fought against is the fact that it is a me culture. It's what I want. It's service to myself and not service to others. And it's worse than that with the reptilians. It's about they believe they have the right to treat humans as cattle. And, you know, I've talked about this before. Again, I'm going to repeat it because we want to break the energy here. You know, as long as the vast majority of humans kill animals to eat them, then the reptilians can turn around and say, well, you humans see yourselves as the most senior animal on earth. And in fact, in the Bible, it says, doesn't it, that God made humans the people in charge and they could do what they wanted with anything. So, of course, people have gone through history, very zealot religious people, holding the Bible up and saying, God has given me, excuse me, God has given us or me the right to kill this cow or to dig a hole for coal or to mine uranium or whatever it is. We have a God-given right to do this. Now, what the reptilians say is, well, you're doing that to every lesser life form, so we're only doing it to you. So if humans stopped eating animals, the energetic pressure placed on the reptilians would be so great that the cycle would be broken. Now that's one aspect. That's part of evolution and part of learning. I'll tell you what I do fight. I fight the fact that reptilians believe that they can traffic humans and I mean adults and children. One of the things we don't hear about very much, it's even the alternative industry doesn't seem to like to talk about the topics. You know, when some of these spacecraft crash, not only do they find little aliens, and that makes a fantastic story, you know, you'll get pages and pages written about the little aliens, but they won't talk about the bits of human bodies that they find. And that was one of the big things that really upset Forrestal, the Secretary of Defense, right back in those days when he supposedly jumped out of his window. He'd seen a craft that had contained human body parts. So one of the things that these reptilians and greys trade is human material. So yes, of course I fight against that. Respect, for me, I think it's not a respect. We're dealing with a race that doesn't have the same emotional feelings as we humans do. We're dealing with a race that runs on order and rules and regulations and honour and ceremonies, doesn't really have an emotional feeling. So what it will do is it will say, that person down there, I can't just kill him. I can't do that. I've always tried to persuade him, and that hasn't happened. And what we have had recently was a bit of a coup upstairs, if you like. Some of his family members tried to oust him, because the New World Order, remember, New World Order doesn't just relate to the New World Order on Earth, it relates outside of Earth. It wasn't happening. So with some of the top echelons been removed off this planet, therefore the command and control system has fallen apart, and there have been a number of commentators who've picked up on that the elite on this planet have fragmented, and one of the reasons is because they're no longer getting the clear information or instructions from on high. So it's a really interesting question. Not really. I mean, if it came to your choice, and the choice is always those, they have to evolve. You can't have it both ways. You can't say, I want to be dominant over all species, but I want to evolve, please. Because if you evolve, you realize that you can't have that concept of dominance. You can't say you're intrinsically more important than X, Y, or Z because you've been around longer, or because you've got white skin, or because this, that, and the other. So they're in a cul-de-sac. They're in a dead end. We call it the lower fourth now. It was just the fourth dimension, but we refer to it as a lower fourth, that is so heavy with this dense energy that it's pressing down into the third. And I have said on many occasions that unless they change track incredibly soon now, it will form like a drip of water from a tap or a faucet. It falls and it creates a bubble, and they will create a bubble of lower fourth dimensional energy inside the fourth dimension, and there'll be no escape from that, because it will be a dimension within a dimension. I know there are people quite right to write in and say there are many, many dimensions, but the dimensions that are within dimensions run naturally. They are ones that have grown organically, but what we're talking about is an artificial forcing of one energy field inside the same energy field, although we can now call it lower fourth as opposed to fourth generally. So the choice is with them, and it's always been with them. They will either change or they won't, and if they don't, well then I really don't know what's going to happen to them. Frankly, I don't care. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Adrian says, do you have any information about the discovery made in Romanian mountains in 2003? The chambers inside the mountain, the projection hole, the tunnels, etc. The Americans seem to have a great interest to control and keep it secret. Thanks a lot. All the best.
I can't pronounce this. It's like Gepeci Mountains. Well, in 2003, I think it became more widely known, but the underground chamber was well known. Ceausescu, who was the last communist ruler of that country, was in fact the last one to be ousted. All the others had fallen. Berlin Wall had come down. He was the last one. The reason that he was the last one, he was desperately trying to do a deal with the US regarding this base, and Russia. Gorbachev, it would have been, I think, at the time. And he was desperately trying to buy time to use this underground military facility, which is not human, well, it's not Earth human, as some form of bargaining chip. And it didn't work. And so I would say that the knowledge of this base has been around for a long time. What happened in 2003 was that a ground-piercing seismic satellite detected chambers coming off this and tunnels. I think one went to the Great Pyramid, the Sphinx, one went possibly into the US, and one went somewhere else, and I can't remember now. So the concept to the US was suddenly, this isn't just a very interesting technological story we want to get our hands on. It's actually something that's networked into other systems that we have knowledge on. So that then became a real battle between who owned it. Was it the Romanian government or was it the US? And what you have is you have Romanian troops around the outside of the perimeter, and you have a mixture of US and Romanian troops actually in the facility. The facility was built for people a lot bigger than us. Call them giants if you want to. Very large people. And if you look on that film, Forbidden Planet, 1951 film, they show a city which is made for very big people. And we just mustn't just think of giants as fairy tale folk. There is a real bit of history here. So this was a humanoid group, I can't say any more than that, who had technology that had a power source that still operated. So in other words, that underground base still had defensive systems which were still operating partially anyway on this power source. The difficulty is that much of it still remains uncracked, unworked out. Some of it is understood and worked out. But this, I want you to understand it, please, as not the be-all and end-all, but just as one underground outpost connected by tunnels to many underground outposts. So almost like a research laboratory, a physical representation, and the one in Egypt, something very different from the one in Romania, etc., etc. So I hope that's of help to you.
Okay, thanks. Pansy asks, what was the most important thing that your grandfather revealed to you about the Illuminati or the Masonic symbols?
Well, I've never been asked that before. That's the great thing about these podcasts. We're getting some cracking questions, aren't we? Well, grandfather never considered me a man until I was 21. So when I was 18, he didn't think I was a man because he'd been born in 1896. And of course, you weren't a man until you were 21. There were very few occasions where he would sit me down and give me sort of an hour or 2 hours of discourse or of information. It was usually during my visits or my stays. It would be not throwaway comments, that wouldn't be the right word, but in a day there might be 15 minutes, and it wouldn't be a very, you know, sitting across a table and, you know, I'm going to instruct you now. It wasn't like that. But nevertheless, the information that I gained was very helpful in later life because I could look back and try and decode it and try and understand it. At the time, I probably didn't understand as much as, you know, he hoped I would. In terms of the symbols, we use the word magic today, but that's not really the right word. The right word is technology. Magic is technology. And if you combine powerful symbols, technological symbols, you can imbue an object or a device with technology as opposed to magic. You can create something, but you have to know the sequence in which you put them. You have to be able to activate them in the right sequence, and you have to be the right person to activate them. So we as lay people will be familiar with one or two signs of Freemasonry. We might be familiar with one or two signs of black magic. Remember that black magic isn't evil magic. It's not evil magic. It means occult, which means hidden. It's like black projects. Remember, a good man or woman creates good magic. A bad man or woman creates bad magic. So again, look how the modern concept has used the word black as evil. You know, we're just falling into the same trap. You know, it's just racism. It's not evil. It's occult. It's hidden magic. So I think some of the things I would have been shown would have been the the creation of this earth in terms of the rules and the laws and how things are hidden is a technology, it's magic. For instance, there's a location, not in this country, but across the border from this country, so that gives you a bit of a clue, where the Knights Templars have hidden sacred objects, and they'll do that by using toning and sacred objects or coded symbols to put something out of this reality. But so it's invisible to human eyes, but can be brought back into this reality. And that's actually, you have to be beyond the 33 degree Mason to understand that. Remember that I get lots of messages saying, you know, my grandfather was a 33 degree Mason, or my dad was a 33 degree. Yes, that is incredibly high, but it's still part of the official hierarchy. That's the paperwork side of it, you know. You could be a 10th degree Mason officially, but actually you could be incredibly high because you're on the secret a compartmentalized group that's doing something else. So it isn't just about the level of degrees you are in Freemasonry. It's what you're doing outside of that in terms of the understood system. So again, people who don't understand that think that the higher up the grade you are, the higher you are. Yes, but that's all about rights and rules and sorting out disputes, meeting people. It's not, you know, like the Great White Brotherhood. So, in terms of symbols, yes, I was shown symbols that unlocked power or created power. If you put this symbol with this symbol, that makes this. In terms of the Illuminati, what was the first part of the question? Because I went on to the symbol bit, please, okay, Becky. There was a thing about what was the most important thing he told me about the Illuminati.
Okay, so what was the most important thing your grandfather revealed to you about the Illuminati or Masonic symbols?
All right, okay.
But your grandfather, oh yeah, he was a Mason, wasn't he, and then he left.
Yeah, my grandfather was a Mason, and then he bought himself out. You can do that. You can buy yourself out. And the reason he bought himself out was that he rose so high in the Freemasonry that he said, as you get higher and higher up the pyramid, and he uses that term obviously, the number of people above you who can help you get smaller and smaller and smaller, and those below you who want your help becomes greater. And he said that in the end he reached not the top, but very nearly the top. And he said that everybody was calling you. Can you sort this out? Can you get this man off my back? I've been arrested by the police. Can you just get them off me back? Or I want this, I want that. And he said that it was ridiculous because he said I spent all my time avoiding other Freemasons because all they wanted was for me to do something for them because I was in such a powerful position. And he said that's why in the end he bought himself out. And I can accept that because my grandfather was quite a private man in terms of that. Although he did do some things that I think were quite helpful. He had a very strong connection to Lancashire, where he was born, and so he was involved in some philanthropic stuff there, but by and large it moved to the south of England, of course. I know the head office is Scotland, but in terms of the government, and he just got totally heartily sick of it, so he was able to buy himself out. In terms of the Freemasonry, what he was able to do was to give me a very good understanding of how the world was governed, how decisions are made, who's really in control. He was able to give me some examples of things that happen and how the broadsheets, as he called them, we call them the tabloid newspapers today, but how the newspapers, before the internet of course, how they would sell the story. But he would tell me all the things that went on behind, and he would say that not only often a story is fabricated, but the people who write the stories have no understanding of the truth, and they're just told to go meet X or Z tells them what to write, and they come back and they write the story, and they just don't know themselves, they're just dupes. Only in very rare occasions do the people know the truth, and then they spin a lie. So he was able to open my eyes as to the fundamental control of the planet, that in most cases, in most governments, Freemasonry, in the highest sense of the word, controls it. And I will finish with this word of warning. Not everybody in the Freemasonry field is bad or evil. The vast majority of Freemasons do so because they want to give something to the community. Let's make that absolutely clear. And for those of you who've partaken in any community groups, many of you will be aware that Freemasons of their own time have given up to donate or to make things happen because they have access to people in power. And I'll give you an example in Whitby, that every year on Boxing Day, there's a Boxing Day dip in Whitby, and hundreds of people will dress up in fancy dress costume on Boxing Day and go run into the water. You have to go up 3 feet, a metre or more, it doesn't count otherwise. And you get sponsored, and you can choose a charity of your choice. You're not ordered to give it to this or that charity. You can choose whatever good cause you want. Now, all of that organisation, the coaches that pick up everybody who's going to be, you know, changing, they need to change in their fancy dress, they come out of the water, they're absolutely frozen, they need a place to go to pay for the St John's ambulance. The police won't turn up unless they're paid, because it's not a 999 call. Heavy machinery is sometimes needed to move the beach, the part of the shingle or the sand, to get it done. All of those things are organised and paid for by Freemasons in Whitby. Now, if they didn't do it, that wouldn't happen. And the other thing to tell you is that the Freemasons do not take a penny, well, they certainly didn't in all the years I was there, of any of the profits that were made for charities. They didn't say, and they could have done, couldn't they, well, we'll take 10% because we've got to pay X, Y, and Z, and that's perfectly acceptable. But they don't even do that. So when we talk about Freemasonry, please don't throw this, we say in Great Britain, throw the baby out with the bathwater. If I went to a bank, if I went to a building society, if I went to an estate agent or real estate, there will always be evil people, and there will always be very good people. So let's not go on a witch hunt here. Certainly in the very highest levels of Freemasonry, there is occult knowledge which is not being shared with human race and does need to be shared. Okay, thank you. Next one.
Okay. Marianne from Germany says, "Dear Simon, first, thank you for your service to humanity. My daughter died 11 years ago. She lived nearly 20 years in London. She became a Buddhist. I was twice in Sam Yiling and had a refuge ceremony with a meditation master, Lama Yeshi, who is now the abbot, and went to Buckingham Palace doing a ritual for the Queen. My question is, can I get out of my vow that I made during the refuge ceremony, that I will reincarnate on earth until every human being is saved, whatever that means? Is this vow a bad thing?"
Why anybody would want to go and do some sort of ceremony for Her Majesty the Queen, I have no idea. Unless the Queen said, "Look, I've got this terrible demon in me, please can you get rid of it?" So I don't understand what's happened there. I mean, I'm sure there is a very good reason. But that, I don't really get my head around that one. The question, of course, is about you making a contract in this lifetime. And again, I'm not clear from it why you would want to get out of that, because it sounded like a good contract. But also, it's a contract that has some strings attached to it. So on the face of it, it sounds very good. But if we look into it, then it sounds a little bit dodgy, as we could say in Great Britain. If we make a contract in this lifetime, we can break it. And depending on whether your soul made the contract or your mind made the contract. There's the argument that there is only one contract, that's through the soul, but actually we could have, in celestial court, we could argue for eons whether the mind or the soul signed the piece of paper. But let's just not, we don't have eons, do we? You'd have to be very clear as to the process, the ceremony that occurred around it. That would have to be very clearly understood. What was said to you, what you said, why you thought that was a good thing, and why you think you could break it now, you should break it now. So there is a process to go through, just as there was a process to sign up to that. So there is a process to renege on that, to break on that. But in order to officially break it, you would have to provide that information. I mean, I'm happy to discuss that with you, but you would have to really do some homework for me and give me the information that I've asked for. But yes, it is possible to do that. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Rena says, Alex Collier has mentioned that there is off-planet ETs that could clean our oceans and all the environmental pollutants very quickly with their technology. Is there also technology that off-planet ETs possess that can take down the soul-trapping web? If so, which ones and how fast could it be dismantled?
Right, the first thing I'm going to tell you is that that technology already exists on Earth. We don't have to rely on ETs. We just have to throw off the burden of a small group of people who delight in oppressing us. Fighting talk, I know, but I think we're getting to that point now. There is already technology to clean up the oceans, to clean up the air. You're quite right. This technology exists in very common form, and certainly do not for one minute believe that any off-planet entity that takes an interest in the Earth would allow this group of people to destroy the Earth to a point where they couldn't bring it back. The Fukushima was one such object. The damage done is much greater than is being reported, frankly, but the intended damage was meant to be much worse. So we did have assistance to prevent Fukushima really altering the course of life on this planet. Let's be absolutely open on that. Although the damage is greater than people say that the oceans have been cleaned up, there's still a very serious issue. But the reality is that the technology already exists here, and it's about prizing that out of the hands of those who have a me only culture. Why should I share that with the likes of you? Well, I'm going to keep this. So that's the first thing I want to make absolutely clear. Secondly, why don't they just come down and do it all for us? Simply because if they did it all for us and they went away again, we'd do it again. You think about it, those of you who've cared for children, they have a bedroom that's in a terrible mess. If you go in and clean it up, great. They'll just make a mess because mum or dad will come in and clean my room up for me. But when you say to the child, you've got to clean your own room up, well, then they get rather sick after a period of time of living in a mess. Well, some kids don't. But generally, they learn that they've got to have responsibility for the environment that they live in. They can't just expect someone else to come in and magically wave a wand and clear it all up for them. And it hopefully teaches those kids that when they go into the wider world, when there is no mum and dad to come and look after them, they have to stand on their own two feet and look after themselves. And that's exactly what's happening off planet. It's about, well, why the heck should we come down and do this for you just to keep on repeating it? You know, one of the great humours of the Christian church is that you can murder somebody on Monday and then go to church and we'd tick the legal side out of this. You go to church and say, please forgive me, God, I sinned. God, through the priest, says, you know, say 10 million Hail Marys or what have you, and God has forgiven you. Then you go out and kill another person. Oh, I'll go back to God, please will you forgive me. The reality here is that human race has to take responsibility for itself, and it's us that have got to do something. And that's part of what Connecting Consciousness was about. By creating Connecting Consciousness, they wanted peoples from all over the world to join together, to support each other, to be strong, and to say there is a different way of doing things. And you know, I can't talk to Auntie Bess or I can't talk to my employer, but I can talk to the friends I've made in Connecting Consciousness, because we need to understand that there are millions of people on the globe, they call it a globe and not a flat piece, and millions of people on the globe who actually want change, but are so disempowered, feel so victimized, feel so powerless, they can't do anything about it. And remember, I've said that these off-planet aliens look at us and proverbially shake their head, because they say, how is it of a population of 4 billion, 5 billion, don't really know, you've got a few hundred thousand who control you? How is it that you outnumber these people by thousands to one, but you leave them there to rule you? The only conclusion they have is you must want that. And this is really powerful. It's not the sort of thing that works in the law courts in a third dimensional planet, but off this planet, this is a really powerful argument. Because why would a body this big be controlled by something that big, a little p-dot, unless it acquiesces, unless it gives them the right to do that? And if humanity has given this tiny, tiny dot the right to do it, who has got the right to come in and stop that? That's the dilemma. And once the human race understands that and throws off this oppressive control, then within the space of 3 or 4 or 5 years, we would see a whole lifetimes of development unfolding in front of us, because that's where we need to be. We need to be up there, equal terms with these other beings. But as long as humanity is quite comfortable to be the underdog, to be a slave, a paid slave, and go to work Monday to Friday, do lots of work, get paid for it, and then give that money back through taxes or through buying to the same people. You know, a big multinational may make soap powder, it may make automotive parts. So you get paid wages and you go and buy a motor car and you think, I've used my wages to buy a motor car. Yeah, but the company that has a shareholding in that automotive probably has a shareholding in the company you work for. So actually, you're just giving the money back to the employer. And I don't know how it was in America, but in Great Britain, 150, 200 years ago, when you worked in a factory for an employer, he paid you in, not in coins of the realm, but on tokens. So it would say Fred's factory. And you could only use that token in the shop that was on Fred's property. So Fred would actually set up a shop selling everything. And so Fred got his money back. So he paid you in money and you went in tokens, which you couldn't use anywhere else. You couldn't go down the shop down the corner because they'd say, oh no, we don't take Fred's tokens here. So you have to go back to Fred's shop, give him the tokens, he got his money back. So human consciousness evolved and that wasn't acceptable anymore. So we went from being, first of all, slaves who were not paid. We think about the black people, particularly on that one. Wasn't solely so, but obviously greatly so. And then we went to being slaves that were paid in tokens, and then human consciousness arose, and we're not having that. Now we're slaves paid in money, which you can use anywhere, but still go back to the same people. What we need to do is devolve beyond money, so we don't need money. We shouldn't have to be paid for doing things. So I could do a whole day on this. That's a really good question. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to read out my thank you list. It's a bit longer than normal because we didn't do a show last week, and so I've had a few more people give me donations, and I'm very kind for that. When I read my list out, sometimes I miss people off. Please don't think that's deliberate. It's a genuine oversight, and if I've missed your name off, I'm really sorry about that. But I want to read this list of people out who've very kindly donated, and I say it's a little longer because we've not been on air for a while. So it's Christian, Marvin, Donnie, Alfredo, Jelna, Eva, Charlie, Robin, Shari, Sevitlan, Neil, Drumset, Leslie, Manuel, Edgar, Gabrielle, Simon, Exciting, I like that one, Exciting, Carl, Monica, Vesna, Valerie, Natalie, and I think that's Enrique, Charlene, Imogen, Bob, Rick, Julius, Sue, Robert, John, and another Sue. So there were two Sues there. Catherine, Christopher, Samuel, Jaroslaw, Tina, Shugart, Imgard, Jeff, Shamsa, Glenn, Tony, Cheryl, Isabel, Susan, is that another Susan? Ursula, Mari, Matthias, Olaf, Anna, Kurt, Amy, Helen, Andre, Nick, Gregors, Emmy, Jeffrey, Martin, Sylvia, Louis, Jan, Nut, Andrea, Thomas, nearly finished now, Alicia, Janice, Natalie, Amina, Vicky, Robert, Dina, Joanne, Jonathan, Jody, looks like Joannes, Margaret, and Gorilla, of course Gorilla, David, Sandra, and Catalin. So those of you that I've named, and those of you I haven't named, thank you. Now, there are a couple of donations that came through, small donations, but always very gratefully received, of course, from a company. I haven't read them out because I didn't have explicit permission to read out the company's name. Some people are very, very, very happy to support the work I do, but they don't want their name in the public if they're a company, because they trade, and I understand that. So if you are a company and you're happy for me to do it or to shorten or abbreviate, then just let me know. So those of you who've helped, I really appreciate that. Feeling a lot better now. You know, I went through a very difficult physical phase a little while ago, and I wasn't particularly well, and I'm okay and firing on all cylinders now. So what I'd like to do is probably one or two more questions, and then I think we probably wrap it up, because we've done our hour, I should imagine.
Yeah, I think we've done almost an hour and a half.
Have we done an hour and a half? Well, let's do one more question, okay. Then, because then I think it's right, because we've been off the air for a bit.
Yeah, okay. So White Owl says, some of us volunteered to come here to diffuse and dilute density and seed a new consciousness on this planet. Why are those in control unable to see that the game is up? Is it because they are unable to escape the ego consciousness? Is the inability to meditate a barrier to true spiritual growth? Thanks.
Now, I think some of these people do meditate, and they meditate very successfully, so we mustn't mix up. Please don't think that good people meditate and evil people don't. It doesn't work like that. It depends on the type of soul. If you've got a soul that's got a fourth dimensional energy in it, you may be a really good person, but you can't meditate. If you've got fifth and sixth dimensional, then you'll find meditating a lot more easier. It's depending on how the energies work. In terms of the barriers, it's mostly from Cyrus or Sirius, the last 25 years. These are these people, souls who are incarnating here. They're about bringing about the changes. People from the fourth dimension are quite well placed to bring positive changes on the planet, because the control system is fourth dimensional, and if you have fourth dimensional energy in you, then you can understand how to pick the lock. So they have a conscious choice in most cases to come here, to incarnate here, and to do something with their physical life, whatever that might be, something that brings goodness and purity or change in a positive way to the planet. And very occasionally people get hijacked, they get their souls hijacked, and they get sent to a very bad family to try to prevent them from developing, or they get pushed around a bit. But in most cases, we get help and we incarnate here, and then the question is whether we remember exactly what it is we're supposed to do. If we can remember what our mission is or our drive is, then we are more likely to achieve nearer to that than if we can never remember who we are. So yes, anybody with a good heart or a good soul can bring positive change to this planet, but there are some people who are absolutely driven, determined to do something, and you know, that's what I mean about working together. Thank you very much indeed. It's been great to talk to you. I'm sorry that the beginning part had so much difficulty, what's going on the planet, but that's the truth, that's what's happening. And whilst I don't want to spread fear, and that's not what I'm about, knowledge is power. And the established media are absolutely not giving the truth. They're absolutely still resisting the truth. And Trump is right when he talks about fake news. We've still got this huge rumour mill, this machine that pumps out lies. So thank you for doing your own research. Thank you for finding the truth. It's really important. And we'll be back with you soon. Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.